Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The beaches are beautiful. The sun shines great. But Standard & Poor's and Moody's downgraded Puerto Rico's debt to junk status last week. Puerto Rico is being called the Detroit of the Caribbean, the Greece of America. And Puerto Ricans are fleeing. This hour, On Point, Puerto Rico Blues. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you been? Have you seen Puerto Rico's woes? Have you fled? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll go to Puerto Rico in a moment, but first, joining me from New York is Dan Rosenheck, longtime eye on Latin America for The Economist magazine. Dan, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Greece in the Caribbean was your headline even before the debt was downgraded to junk status. What are the indicators that say we've got a Greece in the Caribbean here?
The main similarity that we highlighted is that Puerto Rico, very much like Greece and the other peripheral European economies, really suffers from this sort of fundamental structural imbalance, which is that it is a small, relatively poor, relatively unproductive and uncompetitive economy that is yoked to its much bigger, richer, more productive, more powerful northern neighbor by a currency union. And as a result, goods and services in Puerto Rico are far more expensive because they're priced in dollars than they are anywhere else in Latin America. And that makes it hard to sell things and therefore hard to get jobs and therefore hard for people to pay enough taxes for the government to pay its debt. The other big similarity is that as Greece was brought into the European Union, everybody thought that this meant that suddenly all the European countries were equal and they were all equally creditworthy. And so they were willing to lend a lot of money to Greece at very low rates, regardless of the fact that it was still Greece and probably didn't deserve that. And the same is effectively true in Puerto Rico because it is the only issuer, to my knowledge, that is exempt, whose debt is exempt not only from federal taxation, but also from state and local tax in all 50 states. And that has made it very attractive for investors, and every single state mutual fund that ostensibly invests in New York or California debt actually has a slice of Puerto Rican debt to increase the interest rate. And so it, too, has been able to borrow more than it should because of this subsidy. And now, the chickens are coming home to roost.
So the lenders have piled in. Puerto Rico has been happy to take their lending. $70 billion of debt outstanding now, equivalent, you report, to 70% of its GDP, more indebted than any of America's 50 states. But it can't, like Detroit, declare bankruptcy. Now it's junk status. This is a hard rotary wheel to get off of. What does Puerto Rico do?
I think that yes, it is true that Puerto Rico is not a municipality, or it doesn't have a bankruptcy law the way that a state like Detroit does, and it is also true that the Puerto Rican Constitution does have a clause that prioritizes payment of its general obligation debt over over all other expenses. And so when people say Puerto Rico can't default, that's what they mean. Now, I'm somewhat skeptical about this because, there's sort of two checks here. There's the law, but then there's also the people and the streets. And, to me, the idea that if Puerto Rico really got itself in a hole that was impossible to escape, fiscally, would they really fire all the teachers and policemen and firefighters and let the roads go to hell and all the rest just to pay the creditors? I mean, there would be street protests and any governor that tried to do that would have to resign. So I think, regardless of what the law says, there is a chance that if things don't get better, they will either need to get some sort of bailout or they won't be able to pay their debt. And the extremely high interest rate they're being charged and the downgrades reflect that risk.
So
if you look at this parallel with Greece, Greece is definitely seen as a threat to the entire EU. If Greece would go really badly, the entire European Union could pay the price. Does Puerto Rico have that relationship to the rest of the United States? If they would somehow default on their borrowing, you've got a lot of other municipalities and states, for that matter, on the mainland that are also not looking so healthy. Could their interest rates all go up, their circumstances be turned down by Puerto Rico's problems, Dan?
I think that the risk that Greece, which was 3% of the European economy, posed to the rest of the continent was probably a bit overstated. And I don't see a major risk of contagion in the U.S. For one other, the one mechanism by which Greece was thought to be so problematic for the broader EU is that to a slightly lesser degree, the problems that Greece had, were also being experienced in Italy and Spain, which were, giant countries with huge amounts of debt. And that was when, obviously, the European Union couldn't have supported a default from either of them. Now, while it is true that there are, distressed municipalities, obviously Detroit being the main one, that are, in every bit as bad shape as Puerto Rico or worse, and there are states that are in a tight spot, Illinois leaps to mind, Puerto Rico's problems are just so unique. There's no other debt issuer in the U.S. that suffers from these kinds of structural imbalances that that Puerto Rico has. And so its debt profile, is just exponentially worse than that of any American state. And I think that investors recognize that. And if you look at the interest rates, there's no other, certainly no state in the country whose interest rate is close to where Puerto Rico's is. So I think, in this case, the markets are pricing it right.
When you compare it to American states, I mean, it looks bad, but there it is. What about when you compare it to other Caribbean nations? Now, here it's a U.S. territory, but when you look around, is Puerto Rico doing better, worse, comparably with maybe Haiti aside with its earthquake damage and all the rest? How's it doing among its neighbors?
Well, I mean, deciding what the right place to compare it to is a tough question.
Yeah, right.
There's only
Cuba,
one Puerto Rico with this unique status. It is certainly true that a lot of the Caribbean islands are very, very deeply indebted. Jamaica leaps to mind. They had to restructure their debt a few years back. They might have to again. Some of these Caribbean islands are paying 60% of tax revenues in debt payments, and Puerto Rico, fortunately, is not there. But at the same time, Puerto Rico is also, richer and dollarized and doesn't those places can devalue. If you issue debt in your own currency, at least, then devaluation is the easy way out. And that was the trap that Greece was in. And that is the trap that that Puerto Rico is in. And, they're clearly not going to there's no support for them seceding just so they can devalue. So they're going to have to grind this one out.
They're in this funny status, a territory, a commonwealth, but not a state, not an independent nation. They've got some federal subsidies and social safety net there. What does apply to Puerto Rico and Puerto Ricans in terms of, Social Security, minimum wage, unemployment?
So they do get benefits like Social Security and unemployment insurance. They get them at a fraction of what is paid on the mainland. So that is somewhat priced relative to the actual wealth of the country, so it sort of makes sense. But the big one that is a real imbalance is they get the federal minimum wage. And, we at The Economist have broadly been supportive of an increase of the federal minimum wage in the United States, where bringing it up from whatever it is, $7-$8 an hour to 10 or something, is a small incremental fraction of the average wage in the whole United States. In Puerto Rico, a federal minimum wage of $7-$8 an hour, you know, is orders of magnitude too high relative to the productivity of workers on the island.
It's the median wage. I mean, $15,000 lower than the poorest state in Mississippi. Minimum wage almost gets you there.
Exactly. So that's a real problem. And I do think one way that the federal government could try to help would be to carve something out for Puerto Rico there. Now, that said, I think that would make a lot of the minimum wage workers in Puerto Rico who do have jobs very angry.
I heard you say the words bailout. Who would do that?
Yes.
Are we talking about the U.S. government? And what would that mean?
Okay. So this this is a very nuanced issue. So there's – when people think of a bailout, they think of either Washington or the IMF charging to the rescue with a big bridge loan, like, you know, what happened to Mexico in 1994.
Yeah.
Larry Summers runs down and saves the country from the precipice.
Yes.
I don't think that there would be tremendous Congress can't get anything passed these days. The idea of them bailing out Puerto Rico would be tough. But there might be other ways through the tax code that they could help them out without a formal big announced bailout.
Deseo morir. Puerto Rico, nuestra isla de encanto, tranquilo y con su canto.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about an island in trouble, Puerto Rico Blues, a U.S. territory up against a whole lot of problems, and its debt just downgraded to junk status. We're looking at what's going on in Puerto Rico. Dan Rosenheck is with us from New York City, editor of The Economist. He's covered Latin America for the last decade. It is, of course, U.S. territory. Puerto Ricans, of course, are American citizens, and it can look great if you're just flying in for a vacation. Here's an ad from the Puerto Rican tourism outfit.
For 500 years, people have come to Puerto Rico to discover, explore, and create memories.
It's about time you discover why Puerto Rico does it better.
But Puerto Rico is seeing the biggest exodus of Puerto Ricans since the 1950s. Here's a November interview. Al Jazeera talked to Andy Morero, one of many Puerto Ricans considering leaving Puerto Rico.
Mejores escuelas, mejor educación.
There are better schools, a better education. Right now, my sons don't have a social studies teacher. Their teachers are missing. They will have a shot at a better education. Crime here is sky high. Am I going to raise two criminals? No, I don't think so. This is the time to leave.
Where would they have that better education? Andy Morero, Puerto Rican, says in Florida. And here in December, here are teachers protesting, clashing with police in Puerto Rico's Capitol building over pension reform legislation. It's a mess right now, and it's getting all kinds of attention lately, particularly since Standard & Poor's and Moody's downgraded Puerto Rico's debt, much of which, of course, held by Americans, to junk status. The Economist says Greece in the Caribbean, American territory. Dan Rosenheck, standby in New York City, with us now from San Juan, Puerto Rico, is Carlos Colon de Armas, professor of finance and acting dean at the Graduate School of Business Administration at the University of Puerto Rico. Carlos Colon de Armas, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be part of the conversation.
Happy to have you here. I'm sorry that it's tough news on Puerto Rico lately, but glad to have you here. And with us from Mayagüez, Puerto Rico, is Orlando Sotomayor, professor of economics at the University of Puerto Rico there. Professor Sotomayor, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's good to be here. It's a pleasure.
I have to ask you first, are you related to our dear Supreme Court Justice, Sonia Sotomayor, sir?
I hope so.
At least
I tell everybody I am, but I'm not sure. But it looks like a possibility.
Make this real for us. New York Times had a big story on the front page about Puerto Rico's woes recently. And Professor Sotomayor, your brother, Alexis, was featured right at the top, a chemical engineer, used to work for the Coca-Cola company, started his own business selling soaps, very entrepreneurial, did well with that in Puerto Rico. And now, as reported anyway, he has been looking for a job in the United States. What's going on in your own family that's led to this, Orlando?
I think what's going on in my family is what's going on in a lot of people's families, is that the situation is getting to a point that whereby you are, even if you have a job at this moment, you're really seriously considering whether there is you have a confidence that in the future you will still have a job, or even if you do, that it's going to be with the conditions that you think you need. And people are slowly thinking about crossing, as you always say, the small pond to the U.S. I think it's very easy to find anyone in Puerto Rico who knows someone who has left recently or is thinking about leaving in some degree. And when we get surveys asking people if they are considering leaving, you would see that the majority are doing so, to some degree.
There was a time, Orlando Sotomayor, when it would be young Puerto Ricans who would go to sort of make that big migration and claim a new stake in the mainland U.S. Now you and others remind us it's people in the middle of their lives or even later in their 50s going. What's driving people even at that point?
That's correct. I'm a labor economist, and we study migration models. And you would expect young people who are going to be more likely to leave because they have lower costs of moving. They also have a long time to recoup their investment. But we're having now, you see people in their 40s and 50s either leaving or considering leaving. And I think that underscores the lack of hope that the situation can be corrected. I think that's something that's new. In the past, people thought, maybe when we change the government in the next election, things are going to be improved. But I think over time, people have discovered that our problem is not political, but it's rather economic. And they don't have, I feel, a lot of confidence that the government has the tools to righten the ship or the political capital or willingness to do what we need to do to have a country for everybody, in even in the medium term. I'm not even talking about the long term.
Carlos Calendar-Mas, I want to bring these big questions to you. We have a lot of callers as well, and I want to hear from them. Here, let's get one from West Springfield, Massachusetts. Carlos is calling. Carlos, thank you for calling. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. Well, I'm calling just to have a comment on my experience. I moved from Puerto Rico in 2011 to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
My girlfriend got a great job here in Springfield. So
great.
We came together, the both of us, and mostly because in Puerto Rico, we felt like we were stuck. I mean, we were both born and raised in Puerto Rico. We lived there most of our lives. And we just felt stuck. I mean, there's just nowhere to move. I mean,
why, Carlos? What? How do you interpret the problem in Puerto Rico?
How do I interpret it? It's a combination of factors, to be honest with you. It's just the economy is not doing good. I mean, the government seems to not have an answer for anything that's going on. And once the economic crash and the housing crash happened in the United States in 2008. It's just trickled down, and things have been getting progressively worse, and they're not better. I mean, the crime rate's just ridiculous. I mean, the amount of people that are murdered on the island every year is just mind-boggling, and it's just a combination of factors, mostly opportunity, employment. We just didn't see a way to move. There's just no way to move up.
Carlos, what happens if it doesn't get better in Puerto Rico? You grew up there. You were there most of your life, just the last couple of years in the States. What happens if things don't turn up there?
Well, what happens if it doesn't improve? Honestly, you're just going to see what you've been continually seeing. People just leaving. I mean, college graduates, as soon as they graduate college, they don't have work. So what are they going to do? They're just going to start leaving en masse. And when you got all the people who are getting educated leaving the island, I mean, what's left? I mean, it's just I don't see an easy answer for it, to be honest with you. And the way things are going, I don't see myself ever going back except to visit family.
Carlos, good luck to you and to your family. 3.5 million Puerto Ricans up against a tough situation. Here was Puerto Rico's relatively new governor, Alejandro Garcia Padilla, talking with Bloomberg Television. This was in November, assuring everybody that Puerto Rico was not in such bad shape.
The market will see that Puerto Rico is now in the right direction. There's nothing to worry right now. We are paying our debts, and we will keep paying.
But last week, their bond rating, their debt status cut to junk status. Carlos Colon de Armas, do you see the possibility, sir, of a contagion out of Puerto Rico? Could American states and municipalities begin to see their own interest rates kick up if Puerto Rico continues to sink into trouble?
Well, Tom, I really don't. And if I may, let me share with you some data that I think may help understand the situation.
Yes, please.
We have two major problems that are somewhat related, but are really distinct in nature.
Mm-hmm.
We have a weakening economy, and we have a fiscal mess, is really the right word, in the government. But the two have a different genesis. The economy of Puerto Rico started its decline in the mid-1970s. Over the last 40 years, we've had ups and downs, but the long-term trend has been a decline. No matter what that decline has happened, the fiscal situation of the government in terms of its debt has never been a problem until the year 2005. Puerto Rico's debt was always well-respected in the market.
Mm-hmm.
The rating of Puerto Rico's debt was always stable. So the question is, what has happened? Well, what happened began in the fiscal year 2004-2005. So my point is, even though we have a weakening economy, and we've had a weakening economy over the last 40 years, the situation we are facing right now in terms of the downgrade, although, yes, it has an economic component,
mm-hmm.
it has mostly to do with the fact that the government has been overspending beginning with the fiscal year 2004-2005. Now, true, a stronger economy would give more money into the government coffers, but what makes us think that if we give more money to the government, they will spend it wisely? There really is no evidence that that will take place as we speak. Now, you cannot compare Puerto Rico's debt with the states, the U.S. state's debt, without allowing for some important differences. Not all debt is created equal. Up through the year 2004, most of the debt in Puerto Rico, in fact, I would say all of the debt in Puerto Rico, was debt for capital improvement projects. So it was debt that promoted economic development. That means that no matter what the debt level was, when you measure that debt as a percentage of the gross product in Puerto Rico, it was a stable number. It was after the fiscal year 2004 and 2005 when the usage of the debt changed into using money borrowed for expenses instead of investments. And that's when the situation began to deteriorate. Now, there's also another issue that you need to take into consideration. A lot of the debt in Puerto Rico is due to the fact that in Puerto Rico, some activities are done in the government, but in the state they are not. The major example is utilities. In most of the states, the utility companies are private entities, so their debt is not counted as public debt. In Puerto Rico, that debt is counted as the government debt because they are government-owned. Now, utilities are notorious for having high leverage, I mean high amounts of debt. So when you include that as part of the government debt, but that increases the level of public debt in Puerto Rico, but that's not necessarily a problem. So it is a mistake, like many people are doing, to just look at the gross debt numbers and trying to reach conclusions on the gross debt numbers. The issue is not the gross, the issue is the source of the debt. Debt that is promoting economic development, like it was done all through 2004, was not a problem.
A couple callers right here. Ryan in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Ryan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you know?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just want to make a comment that I have been to San Juan numerous times, and my wife will never allow me to go back again.
Why?
As your last caller said, the crime, we almost got jumped by a group of people at a very nice hotel there, and the hotel said, oh, they had been here before, so we were wondering why they were let in again. And just the deterioration you see in the island. I've been to most of the Caribbean. I just got back from St. Lucia. You see great island nations down there. They're not as wealthy, but Puerto Rico, you just see the difference. And I will probably never go back there again.
Wow. Thumbs down, and that's after many visits. And it sounds like you'd like to, but not for you now. Ryan, thanks for your call. Orlando, what about these issues of crime in particular and the drug trade in Puerto Rico?
Well, crime is just one more issue that we have to deal as a tourist here, and as a person who lives here. We are faced with high crime. We are faced with high utility rates. As my brother pointed out, he pays last month he paid $600 in just in electricity, and people also can relate to that, because even though if they're not business people, they, you know, if you say last month I paid $400 in utilities, the answer is going to be probably I pay even more. So we're faced with that. We're faced with very high taxes. And in return, the average worker will get very little from the government, at least in the U.S. You may pay taxes, but you see results. You see schools. But in Puerto Rico, if you are in middle class, going, you know, getting your kids to public school is not an option. The first thing that a Puerto Rican family does when the income improves is to just to pay the private tuition. So, as the working class, the middle class is stuck between a rock and a hard place in terms of cost and in terms of lack of support from government services. And on top, yes, we face crime, and we also have to pay to tend to that problem in the form of extra security. If you live in a building, you need to pay for extra policemen that you end up paying in your in the service charges. And if you live in a house, most housing in Puerto Rico is going to be have some sort of a control and a gate that you also have to pay monthly charges.
And all that stacks up. Orlando Sotomayor, Carlos Colon de Armas, stand by. Dan Rosenek will come to you right after the break. But in a word, can the United States just look away from the problems of its territory here, Dan, and leave Puerto Rico to deal with themselves? Is that likely?
I think actually it can, because by doing nothing, the U.S. winds up doing a lot. Basically, Puerto Rico passed a law that allows companies that operate in both countries to deduct their Puerto Rican taxes from their federal taxes. And so I think the way they get out of this is they keep jacking up that tax. Obama just has to look the other way. The IRS looks the other way, and they take the federal treasury's money.
Eso nadie va a cambiar. Yo soy hijo de Borinquen y eso nadie va a cambiar. Y el día en que yo me muera.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about an island in trouble, Puerto Rico. Blues, a U.S. territory up against a whole lot of problems, and its debt just downgraded to junk status. We're looking at what's going on in Puerto Rico. Carlos Colon de Armas is with us from the University of Puerto Rico. Orlando Sotomayor, same, in Mayagüez, joins us from Puerto Rico, professor of economics there. Dan Rosenheck joins us from The Economist magazine, has covered Latin America for the last decade, joins us from New York. Dan, here's a comment, lots of comments online, but here's one from Ogden who says, oh, poor banks. They must not have done their homework in issuing loans. Will they go bankrupt like Lehman? Ogden writes, oh, but the countries, protectorates, counties, cities, people, they sink, are still on the hook. That's the crime. Let Puerto Rico and all public debt default. Take it out of the banks themselves as penalty for not doing their own jobs well enough. What do you say to that perspective, Dan?
I think that it represents a bit of a lack of a familiarity with the different kinds of debt that are out there. Puerto Rican debt is very different from the kinds of, you know, say, collateralized debt obligations or any of the sort of Wall Street casino subprime stuff that, you know, became famous in the mid-2000s. Puerto Rican debt is they're municipal bonds, and they are primarily sold to individual investors in the mainland who like them because they offer a very high interest rate that's exempt from all taxation. If Puerto Rico does fail to pay its debt, it is not going to be some, you know, faceless Gordon Gekko banker who's left holding the bag. It will be, above all, American retirees who hold those primarily through mutual funds, who depend on it for retirement income.
I don't know. Ogden may not be satisfied with that, but we'll see. David in Williamstown, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was wondering if your guests are going to address the possibility of Puerto Rican independence. A few years back, I read a book. It was by a gentleman named Angel Collado Schwartz, I think is his name. And I just remember seeing figures in there that just I kept writing, wow, in the margins. And I'll just mention a couple, which are, for example, a number of adults who are in the labor force 16 years and older. It was only like half of the population. And then there were things like Puerto Rico is really treated like a colony. It's not able to make treaties. I hope I'm correct on some of this, but your guests will correct me. Treaties with other companies with regard to trade. Can't specify or have control over their immigration. Can't even work out most favorable and effective agreements with shipping companies to do trade, so on and so forth. So I'm not saying independence tomorrow, but is leaning more on the United States maybe even worse, and that they should be trending in the other direction? So thank you.
Independence on the other end of that spectrum, of course, David, is statehood, which many Puerto Ricans have expressed a preference for in different referenda over the years. Online here on Facebook or Twitter, James says, seems that Puerto Rico needs to either join the Union or leave the United States. Orlando Sotomayor, what about Puerto Rico's status in relationship to the United States? How important is that in its troubles here? How do you or other Puerto Ricans look at independence or statehood or something in between where you are now?
Well, if we are ever independent, it's going to be because the U.S. Congress gives unilateral independence to Puerto Rico, much in the way that the U.K. did to its colonies in the Caribbean, because it doesn't have almost any support on the part of Puerto Rican voters.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems that our island faces is that we don't have our political parties are not formed along economic lines as you have in the U.S. or in Europe. They're aligned along their interests pertains almost exclusively to the relationship of Puerto Rico to the U.S., you know, one party representing statehood, the other one independence, the other one in between. And as it pertains to economics, there's absolutely no plan whatsoever. So whenever we have elections, we are just pretty much voting for a relationship with the U.S., not for any economic plan to the right or to the left or to the center. And
and yet that move to become the 51st state.
The U.S. is an obstacle, really, to facing our own problems.
Yeah.
It used to be in the past a magic bullet to solve our problem, which is certainly not in the opinion of most economists.
And, of course, that statehood never seems to come much closer. You're a labor economist. Puerto Rico has one of the lowest labor participation rates in the world. Now, this is a big problem on the mainland now as well. But in Puerto Rico, I'm reading here from the New York Times story last week, only 41.3% of working-age Puerto Ricans are in jobs, and one in four works for the government. Why the low labor participation rate, Orlando?
The answer it may be a lot easier for someone who looks to us from the outside. The moment that you see unemployment rates in the order of 10-15%, as an economist, you immediately think, what is the minimum wage? And in fact, yes, the minimum wage here is the U.S. minimum wage, and there it doesn't have hardly any effect in terms of the labor market. But here, we have the same minimum wage as in the U.S., but close to half of the productivity. So the bite is very, 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 very stronger here.
Are you saying it's too high for Puerto Rico?
Yes, it's in terms relative to the median wage, it's probably the highest minimum wage in the world. So that does not contribute towards job creation. And on the other hand, in terms of labor supply, you have a transfer system in terms of welfare benefits or social security of the sort that's designed for and by a high-income country and has been, on the whole, generally transplanted without much thought into a developing country setting. And I don't mean to have us sound like victims, because we, politicians and administrators gladly take the high minimum wage, and they gladly take the very high replacement rates of transfer income. But the costs are mounting, and long-term costs, and that's what we're facing at this moment. We're paying the price for things that were done in the past, because they brought present benefits at the cost of long-term cost.
Interesting, as the United States debates a higher minimum wage. Matt in Cleveland, Ohio. Matt, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I purchased property in Puerto Rico probably a couple years ago at this point. For obvious reasons, here in Cleveland, I kind of want the sunny beaches and the great weather.
Yeah.
But I went through the real estate process down there, which was interesting. I had a real estate agent who was a friend of mine, and we went through the process, and I found that the tax collection, the process, was very inefficient. I mean, I really wanted to do everything, everything I should to pay taxes
right.
and such, and I felt like the tax collection government agency in Puerto Rico did a very inefficient job getting my money. You know, I had to sort of say, hey, you know, here are my taxes. I want to pay them.
Wave your hands to do the right thing. Yeah.
Yes. And my real estate agent says that's a serious problem on the island is people, the tax collectors are not enforcing tax collection. And if it were more efficient, the island would be in much better condition.
Hey, Matt, we'll look at that. Matt, describe your house to us. What kind of house what property did you buy? Where is it?
Well, it's not a house yet, actually.
Just
I bought
property.
A plot of land on Culebra, which is a small municipality off the coast north of Vieques.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, Americans purchase down there, hope to build the dream house one day, which hopefully will come true. But I did purchase land, and the transaction is similar to buying a house.
Do Puerto Rico's problems worry you, Matt, about that dream of building your, beach house down there one day?
Yeah, I mean, in a way it does. For people who have visited the island, there are two islands off the coast of Puerto Rico. People don't usually think about Vieques and Culebra,
beautiful,
which operate not independently, but they are, away from the mainland. They're away from a lot of the crime that's being described. So I'm a little more confident about that, whereas if I were purchasing on the main island, I'd probably be a little more nervous about that.
Yeah, Matt in Cleveland, I appreciate your call. Carlos Colon de Armas, what about this issue of taxes and tax collection? Your newish governor, Alejandro Padilla, has raised taxes, has cut spending some. What about Puerto Rican tax collection facing this big debt? Are they collecting efficiently, sir?
Well, what happens, Tom, is as I hear the callers, we are talking about situations that are true in Puerto Rico, but that did not trigger the problem we are facing.
Mm-hmm.
So my worry is that we are talking anecdotes, and they are all true. But things like minimum wage, when it changed, it didn't trigger the situation we are facing today. Tax collections have always been a problem, but it didn't trigger the situation we are facing. The situation we are facing has little to do with a weak economy, although we have a weak economy. The situation we are facing has little to do with crime, although we do have a crime problem. The situation that we are facing in terms of the downgrade cannot solve only by fixing the economy.
I thought that you focused on fiscal issues before, but I'm seeing reporting here that the governor has done some cutting of spending. Is it on the right path?
Well, the current budget approved by the current governor increased expenditures by $750 million, and he's offering to cut $170. So the situation that we are facing has a lot to do with overspending. The revenues were projected, and we've been spending over what the revenues are. So give more revenues to the government. Do you think they're going to spend less? That hasn't been the history of the last 10 years.
Dan Rosenheck, you write in The Economist that, the professor says, look at your spending, but you look at the Greek experience and say, be careful. Say that Greece, suggests that austerity alone is no route to solvency in a chronically uncompetitive economy. So what about Puerto Rico's handling of its finances, Dan?
Yeah, so I think that I'm completely on board with that line of thought. I think the government is doing what it has to do. The markets are demanding short-term austerity because the interest rate has gotten so high that it's very tough for them to access the markets. This downgrade isn't going to help. And so if you can't borrow, all you can do is tighten the belt. I don't think they really have a choice. But that imposes a lot of collateral damage because as you cut spending and raise taxes, you shrink the economy and therefore shrink your tax base, and so you wind up in this austerity recession debt economic death spiral, which is what happened to Greece. It's what happened to Argentina in 2001. It's an old story, and the typical exit for this, which is devaluation, isn't available to them. So I think that in the long run, the only way for them to get out of that downward spiral is to get the economy growing enough that that they can start to increase the tax base and that they stop losing population with a fixed debt load. And that is a very long term process, and markets are impatient. I think that the government does have some ideas for how to make the economy more competitive, and they have an economic development team that's trying out a bunch of different things. They're trying to promote medical tourism. They're trying to offer new tax incentives for rich people to move there and set up shop. But they are doing structural reform. They have done a couple of pension reforms that are big if the courts wind up upholding them. But all these reforms will take many years to bear fruit, and there are many more, above all fixing the money losing expensive electricity system, that haven't been done. And
it sounds as though you and Carlos Colon de Armas may just differ in your focus on where the effort needs to be. Here's a question from our website. James asks, why wouldn't people leave Puerto Rico en masse, particularly if they're well-educated and with a mastery of English? The same immigration happens today in the Midwest, Western New York, Detroit, Orlando Sotomayor. What about that? These are American citizens. They can go anywhere in the mainland U.S. It's a very high rate, maybe the highest rate, higher than any state, of departure. But could it grow substantially higher, Orlando?
Yes, it could. As a matter of fact, last week we got the last numbers from the census, and just in the last 3 years, the equivalent of 4% of the population left the island. And that, to me, was a shocking number. And when people talk about the Times article not being representative of the situation, I think it would be completely representative of the situation. And to me, people are voting with their feet. They don't have the confidence that the government has the tools to address the problems, and I think they are correct. I think that the first step that we need to take as a country is to accept that we, our government, is way, way, way over their heads in their problem, and we need most of all technical help on the part of whatever we can get it, maybe from the U.S. government, from the from the Council of Economic Advisors, because if we start talking what should be done, we could have a week talking about Puerto Rico.
How's your brother doing? Your brother went looking for work in the United States. Has he found it?
As a matter of fact, he's gotten a very good response from the New York Times piece. He's gotten offers from all over the U.S. In terms of people wanting for him to set up this business in many places. He's also gotten offers from people offering jobs, and he's very well qualified. And to be a businessman in Puerto Rico and still to be able to survive, I think you can be a businessman.
Good for him. The brother Sotomayor surviving there. Orlando Sotomayor at the University of Puerto Rico, thank you for joining us today. Carlos Colon de Armas at the University of Puerto Rico, our great thanks to you as well. And Dan Rosenheck with The Economist, thanks to all of you. Puerto Rico, an island in trouble, and we understand it a lot better thanks to your insights. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We go out with Hector Lavoe, signature song, Mi Gente, My People. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Y yo le canto a Papá Dios y pa' todo el mundo y mi gente.